The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment of the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence.
I'm Nina Porzucchi, and this is The World in Words. Today, we have a story about the status of Arabic in an unexpected place, the United Arab Emirates.
Arabic only became the official language in the UAE in 2008.
This is The World's Shirin Jafari in the studio with me. She recently went to the UAE to report on the status of Arabic in this Arab nation. That seems crazy to me, Shirin, 2008.
But you have to remember, Nina, the UAE only became a country in 1971. Before that time, there were a series of states, and they were called the Trucial States. They were under the protection of the British because there was a lot of piracy in the Persian Gulf. But eventually, seven of those states decided to form a country, and they called themselves the United Arab Emirates.
An emirate, that means state in Arabic, right?
Right. What's interesting about the UAE today is that the Emiratis, you know, the people who come from the Emirates, only make up 18 to 20% of the whole population.
Only 18% of the total population?
Exactly. Meaning that they're a minority in their own country. That's because a lot of people from all over the world came to the UAE to work.
Can you talk a little bit about the geography?
It's not a big country. It's the size of the state of Maine here in the US. It's right next to Saudi Arabia and not far from Iran and Iraq. You've probably heard those names a lot more than the UAE.
Right. Speaking of the neighborhood, you grew up in that neighborhood. You grew up in Iran. Did you have to learn any Arabic when you were growing up?
I did. So we had to take Arabic classes in school, but to be honest, I have to admit, we didn't take it very seriously. It was very boring. So I ended up with not a great command of Arabic, unfortunately. Farsi and Arabic are actually very similar. We have a similar alphabet. We only have four more letters than Arabic. P, J, G, and Ch.
You have the P sound.
We do have the P.
Let's just get into your story.
Let's do it. Let's meet Tala Badri and her family.
Hello.
Hi.
Beautiful house.
Thank you.
Badri is a single mother of two. Ali, her son, is 11, and Sara, her daughter, is 15.
Black coffee.
This is a typical Emirati family. Badri was born here. She married an Emirati, now her ex-husband. Her children were born and raised in this country. There's only one problem. The kids struggle with Arabic. English is their first language.
I feel sad that their Arabic isn't as good as it should be, most particularly for Ali, only because he's a boy and he is Emirati, and I think it's I think he will get picked on.
My friends have already been talking, why don't you speak Arabic as your first language? You're an Emirati. You should speak Arabic your first language.
What did you tell them?
Just nothing.
They laugh it off, but Badri worries. She worries, for example, about the compulsory military training that Ali will have to complete as soon as he's done with school, when he's 18 years old. His Arabic is so minimal, she says. He'll have difficulty socializing with his peers. And here's the thing. Ali is not alone. A lot of Emiratis, especially younger ones, are not fluent in Arabic, which is technically their mother tongue.
Ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome to Dubai International Airport. The local time is now.
I wanted to find out why. In the time I spent in the UAE, even on the plane, not once did I find I needed Arabic. At the airport, the Emirati immigration officer joked about my visa in English. Taxi drivers, hotel staff, waiters, all of them spoke English. In fact, I think it would have been much harder to get by without English. Which gets us back to Tala Badri and her kids. At home, Badri speaks English with the kids.
I mean, my mum says to me, you need to speak more Arabic to the kids. And I'm like, oh, no, it's just easier. They don't even listen to me in English, let alone in Arabic.
So English at home, and then there's school. Ali and Sara both go to a private British school. Actually, I found out that most Emiratis send their kids to private schools. They think they provide better education. But the thing with most private schools is that subjects like math, science, and geography are taught in English, and Arabic is treated as a second language. Here's Ali again.
So I have Arabic classes 4 times a week, and I have English 5 times a week.
Which one do you like best?
English.
Why?
I just really enjoy writing stories and writing some quality piece of writing. I just find it very good.
If you didn't know anything about Ali, you would automatically think he's British, right?
I definitely wish I could speak Arabic better so I could have more of an understanding when it comes to my Arabic and Islamic lessons.
As I was reporting this story, my guide, Razan Al-Zayani, said to me, "Wait, this is my story. This is exactly what happened to me and my friends." "Great," I said, "I want to meet them."
"Hi, I'm Shireen. Nice to meet you."
So we stopped by her friend's apartment, which is located in a nice, quiet neighborhood in Dubai. Dina Sharad is a proud owner of a very cute and friendly Chihuahua.
Oh, he's not being shy at all. I was just going to say, he's kind of shy sometimes.
Her apartment is comfy with the air conditioning humming away in the background. Remember, this is the UAE, so it's pretty hot outside. So there's me, Razan, Dina Sharad, and a second Dina, Dina Gandur. So 2 Dinas.
I'm Dina Sharad, and I was born and raised in Abu Dhabi, and I've been in Dubai for 6 years.
We'll call Dina Sharad Dina number one.
I'm Dina Gandur. I was born in Abu Dhabi, and I've been in Dubai for about 6 years.
And Dina Gandur, Dina number two.
I'm Razan Al-Zayani. I grew up in the UAE, and I've been in Dubai for 6 years.
So what language did you grow up with? Maybe we can start here.
I definitely grew up with English.
That's Dina number two.
It was the language that was taught in school all the way from kindergarten. English was also spoken at home. Growing up in the UAE, I think because like your community is really important and your friends are so important and you're in a school where there's people from like all over the world, and coming home and speaking Arabic just didn't seem like a very big priority.
What did it make you feel when your parents insisted that you speak Arabic?
It was like maybe other kids feeling like when their parents say like you should eat your vegetables. It was like, great, cool, but no thanks.
For Razan, my guide, things started off well. Arabic was her strong subject, and she did like it.
And then I went to another school, which is the school that I met Dina and Dina. And Arabic didn't really have that much of an emphasis, and that's where I got my first detention ever.
In Arabic.
In Arabic class. And I remember her, and it was like my second week at the school, and I was like the new kid or whatever. I'm not going to say her name, but she's probably still alive, or maybe not. She gave me detention because I didn't know the meaning of a word. She made me stand up and say, like, what is the meaning of this? I don't even remember the word. And I didn't know. And then that became a switch. Like, it became a negative association with the language because it was taught in such an old school fashion. Like, the teachers were older, the books were just not interesting. There was nothing that we could relate to. Even us as Arabs, we all have different dialects, you know? So Dina's dialect would be a little bit different than the other Dina would be different than my dialect. Mm. So it's very easy to revert to English anyway. It just simplifies it.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I hated Arabic classes. I hated Islamic classes.
So slowly, Arabic faded out of Razan and her friends' lives. Later on, they went to study in the US. No problem there. They spoke perfect English. But it was when they returned to the UAE to work that it hit them. They're Arabs, but they're not fluent in Arabic. Here's Dina number one, Dina Sharad.
When I started working like in a professional environment, my first like professional job, in an advertising agency, and one of the clients I had was a Lebanese lady who preferred to speak in Arabic. So, of course, I was trying to make an impression. So I started speaking to her in Arabic in our first meeting. And then within 2 minutes, she actually looked at me and she's like, "Dina, I have to stop you. I feel like you're more comfortable speaking in English. Like, will you just please switch? Like, it's fine." And that was I was like, I am a professional woman, you know, I make like a decent salary and I'm here like in this professional work environment, and I felt shrunken.
They all had similar stories. So how did we get here? How did the UAE end up with a generation that finds it so hard to speak its mother language? For that, we have to go back to the time when the United Arab Emirates struck gold. Oil was discovered here in the late 1950s. With oil came money, and with money came development. Suddenly, this mainly desert country needed roads, hospitals, and airports. Construction boomed at dizzying pace. And it didn't take long for the word to get out. One man who was behind the development boom was Sheikh Zayed, the ruler of Abu Dhabi.
The vultures of world commerce descend on Zayed's little kingdom. They're perfectly decent vultures, just bankers and businessmen doing their job. $100 million a year is a nice piece of export market to get your hands on.
This is from a documentary about the UAE from the 1960s called Farewell Arabia. Sheikh Zayed wanted to modernize his city. No cost spared. Not a second wasted.
And he's out every day to spur on the men who are making him a brand new kingdom.
Concrete, and this will be going out the box in the mile, and the second stage will be done next spring or next summer, whenever Your Highness decides.
English, this language you just heard, slowly started to make its mark on the Emirati life. Before the construction boom, the Emiratis were mainly pearl divers and raised camels. So they needed outside help to make this new kingdom become a reality. From the West came the British and Americans, who mainly developed the projects, and from the East came the workers.
Many of these expatriates are in the construction industry, service industries.
That's Alan Weber. He teaches English in Qatar.
And they're coming from countries like Pakistan, Nepal, Philippines, and Bangladesh.
Many countries where the British had considerable influence. And so how do all these people from so many different backgrounds communicate with each other? In English. At the same time, leaders in the UAE began to see English as the language of the future, of opportunity and growth. English entered classrooms. Emirati children had to learn to speak, read and write in a language that was foreign to them until then.
Yes, that's the window. Huh. That's the window.
As English thrived both in schools and in Emirati society, Arabic slipped. Outdated textbooks, tedious teaching methods, mostly uninspired teachers and uninterested students all helped create what we see today. The little Arabic that did find itself in classrooms was the classic formal version of the language, known as Fusha. A note here about the Arabic language. There are about 30 countries in the world where Arabic is the official language. Each of these countries have a different Arabic dialect. So, for example, an Iraqi would not have the same dialect as an Egyptian, even though they both speak Arabic. This is what Razan, my guide, was talking about earlier. There is, however, the modern standard Arabic, known as Fusha, which all Arabs should be able to understand. This is how Nuro Ahmad Al-Noman, an Emirati writer, explains it.
This language is not used anywhere except in newsrooms and in textbooks.
أهلاً بكم إلى موجز الأنباء من قناة الجزيرة في قطر.
You would never go into a shop in the UAE, for instance, a grocery shop, and speak to the teller or the cashier or whoever, and say to them, هل لي برغيف من الخبز, which is almost the equivalent of dost thou hath a loaf of bread in English.
Yet this is the Arabic that kids learn in school, and it's simply not practical, says Tala Badri, Ali's mother.
Unfortunately, the Arabic that is still taught, that the ministry Arabic that the kids have to do, is so boring and it's so impractical. Like, they wouldn't know how to go to a shop and buy anything or ask for directions or anything like that, but then they could read a poem and quote you something that is completely impractical.
Al-Noman, the writer, says she has been thinking about the status of Arabic language in her country for a while. She's a science fiction writer. She writes in Arabic, but actually it was an American movie in English that got her interested in that genre.
was 12 or 13, so it wasn't very difficult to attract my attention. It was, Star Wars was a big, big thing at the time. I mean, it still is, obviously. But no one has ever seen anything like that before then. Everything about that movie was so exceptional. These three people who were adventurers and against an empire, an evil empire, I just loved everything about it.
Al-Noman fell in love with sci-fi movies and novels, but the only material she could find was in English, so she read mostly English books. Later on, as she was looking for books for her own kids to read, she noticed the same thing. There are not enough Arabic books for a younger audience. So she thought maybe it's time to write one herself. She did. She wrote a series of Arabic sci-fi novels. The first one is called Ijwan.
I never imagined, not in my wildest dreams, that I would become a writer of fiction, ever, in Arabic. And I remember when some of my friends, after the book was released and some of them had read it, they said, wow, Noura, we never expected you to write in Arabic, because we always thought that you sounded so English that Arabic was alien to you.
Today, Al-Noman says for some kids, Arabic is the language that their older teachers and grandparents speak, the language of the past. And that doesn't necessarily make them excited to learn it.
Our kids are very tech-oriented. If their iPhone is broken, they don't wait for you to fix it. If their iPad is broken, they don't wait for you to fix it. They want a new one. And if Arabic is broken, not because Arabic itself is broken, but because of our perception of it, if Arabic is broken, they don't want to use it. They want a new one. And the new one is already available, which is English.
You have to remember, all this happened in a very short time, in a span of about 4 decades. It's almost as if there was no time to consider what would happen if Arabic slowly faded. Recently, though, the tide has turned, somewhat. As one Emirati official told me, we need to get that language back. In 2008, the government felt it needed to make clear that Arabic is the UAE's official language. Then came conferences after conferences about the importance of Arabic language, meetings, reports, and brainstorming ensued. By 2021, the ruler of Dubai has said, kids should be able to read and write comfortably in Arabic. Al-Noman, the science fiction writer, agrees. But she thinks her country shouldn't have any animosity against English.
And I find it very funny, in a ha-ha kind of way, when people think of English as the thing that's destroying Arabic. Nothing is destroying Arabic. It's just that we haven't allowed it to grow and evolve just like any other language.
And one way she thinks it can grow is through culture.
All we need to do is just to produce a lot of Arabic content that is so exciting and so interesting that it automatically makes them beg us to buy them the next book in a series. That is my dream. The kids who stood in line in front of bookshops all over the world waiting for the next installment of Harry Potter could also be Arab kids waiting for the next installment of a book in Arabic. That's not difficult to do.
One sign that things are slowly changing is this language institute in Dubai.
Saif, salam alaikum ya Saif.
Alaikum.
Saif is 3 years old. This is his first time in an Arabic class. Just a couple of minutes ago, his mom dropped him off. And he walked in reluctantly, tears streaming down his face. Now though, he's happily practicing his numbers in Arabic. Yusra Al-Hashemi came up with the idea for this place. She's kind and gentle. We sit down to chat over tea.
I would say 80-85% of our students are Arab. Both their parents are Arab. You will find their kids are not speaking Arabic. So I thought maybe let me open a center which will change the way of teaching the language. It will make it more up to date, more approachable for the kids, more interesting for them to learn it.
And so she ditched her corporate 9-to-5 job to start this institute.
It's not right to blame these kids when they grow up why they didn't learn the language, because there wasn't any alternatives for them. I have some kids, they tell their mother, why Can you teach me your language?
The kids are saying, teach me your language.
Yes.
Not our language.
Yeah.
Because they feel their parents are speaking a different language than the English that they speak it at home. So they feel, okay, teach me your language, you know?
What about you yourself? Do you have children?
I have kids, and I see it with my children. Because they're like, when they go to school, they speak English the whole day. So when they come back home, with each other, they speak English. So I have to remind them, you have to speak Arabic, you have to speak Arabic. With me, they speak Arabic.
How do they feel about that when you tell them you have to speak?
I know, sometimes they get annoyed. But I feel as I said, like, it's very challenging. But if you let go, then it's very difficult to ask them later to speak it.
كيف الحال يا شيخة؟
The kids practice the names of fruits, hi, how are you, things like that, and they seem pretty into it. But of course, Al-Hashimi is not naive. She knows that change can't happen overnight. And a couple of hours of classes like these won't magically turn kids into fluent Arabic speakers.
We have some mothers which they come to us and they said, please make sure that my child learn the language and how you will teach him and all that. And when she want to leave him in the class and she goes, she doesn't speak with him in Arabic, like, مع السلامة بشلك بعدين ولا anything, you know. She said, okay, bye, Muhammad, I'll see you later. You know, I feel, oh my God, يعني, you want 1 hour this child to understand and learn everything in this 1 hour? So, and then I think everything starts from the home.
Back with Razan, Dina 1 and Dina number 2, I wanted to know whether they would do things differently, if and when they have their own kids. Would they emphasize Arabic first? Would that even be possible, since their own first language is not Arabic?
It's really Arabic. Funny, because I was like, Dina, your first answer should be, of course.
That's Dina number 2.
But I'm also thinking of the global world that we live in, and the fact that we do expect somebody to speak English somewhere, everywhere that we go. I think it's a beautiful language. I'm like Dina and Razan, I'm super proud to be Arab, and I think there is something really significant about protecting it and having it live on. But being the overachiever that I am, I'd probably want my kid to speak like 7 languages. So I don't know. Yeah, I think so. But then again, like, why?
Don't you feel that it's, wouldn't you want your kid,
that's Razan, my guide,
to understand your parents if they're joking around in Arabic?
Yeah. No, I think that is a really good point. I think that's after being in the US for so long and coming back, that's almost what I missed the most, is like being the insider, like, oh, I get that joke, you know, or I get that reference. And it's really nice. But yeah, I mean, that would be really cool if they could be better than me. Why not?
Razan and Dina number 1 said they would definitely want their kids to learn Arabic and English. It's going to be a challenge, they admit, but it's important to them. Language is such a big part of your identity. Could you be a full-on Emirati if you don't speak Arabic? Would Ali be an Emirati if he doesn't understand the speech the UAE's leader gives in Arabic? I put this to Ali's mom, Tala Badri.
I think identity is a very personal thing, and it's very internal. It might be different from people who look from the outside in, but that's somebody else's perception. So if somebody sees Ali, they wouldn't know that he was Emirati unless he was wearing a kandoora.
That's the formal Emirati dress.
But I don't think that detracts from identity, because we know who we are and where we come from.
Badri tells me Ali has prepared a speech in Arabic, and he hopes to one day recite it to the ruler of Dubai in person. Ali wants to get better at Arabic, but he says at least for now, he's more comfortable speaking English. And maybe he is the face of this new Emirati identity, an English-speaking Arab.
The question that I have for you, Shireen, is, are there still places in the Emirates, other than, you know, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, where Arabic is spoken more?
There is, actually. When you think about Dubai and Abu Dhabi, these are really cosmopolitan cities. And if you go to other Emirates, such as, for example, Ras Al Khaimah or Fujairah, because those states are a little bit more insulated, you're going to hear a lot more Arabic compared to a place like Dubai, where you hear English a lot more, for example, in cafes, restaurants, and so on. In general, I think those two cities are exceptions. And the reason for that is Dubai is a financial center in the UAE, and Abu Dhabi is officially the capital of the country.
So what more is the government doing to stop Arabic from disappearing?
I spoke to a couple of people in the government, and one of them told me about a program called Living Arabic. It's for Arabic teachers, and what they do, they get together all the Arabic teachers in the city, and they talk about the latest teaching methods. The idea is to get the teachers excited, to make sure they feel like they're being appreciated. And when the teachers are happy, they're going to have happier students, and they get the students excited. I also went to a private school and sat in on an Arabic class. It was an advanced Arabic class.
What was that like?
It was actually very interesting. They were analyzing a novel in Arabic.
A modern novel, not like exactly. Ancient literature.
No, it was a modern novel. And they were analyzing the characters, talking about the storyline. And it was really fascinating to hear the students speak in Arabic and analyze, for example, a character in Arabic. And I spoke to the teacher, and she said, you know, I've been working with these students for years. It's not easy. It hasn't been easy. But we've been working hard together, and that's why they're so much more proficient in Arabic than compared to other students. And she said, you know, we speak only Arabic in class. And I said, so what about outside? When you step outside, what happens then? And she sort of chuckled and said, nobody speaks Arabic outside, not even me. So even the Arabic teacher says, I don't speak Arabic when I'm outside of this classroom.
Shireen, after all of this reporting and seeing these different angles from the government side, and, you know, you went to a couple different schools, what do you think? Is the UAE ever going to become an Arabic first nation as it once was?
Personally, Nina, I don't think this is going to happen. English is so much part of this society. It's hard to separate it. It's as if the genie is out of the bottle. When you think about it, there's a whole system that functions in English. There's the economy, the healthcare, education, and people who work in these sectors, they speak English and they don't speak Arabic. So how can this work if you're trying to run a country and the people who are running it only speak English? I heard something that was really interesting from a researcher in Abu Dhabi. She teaches English in one of the schools in Abu Dhabi. And she said, you know, I feel like English for this country has been like a double-edged sword. And it's interesting that the expression double-edged sword comes from Arabic.
Really?
It does. And she said, you know, English, yes, it helped them modernize, it helped them connect to the world, it helped them grow, but it was also at the expense of Arabic. And it's going to be very hard for this country to return to the time before all this growth and expansion and development.
Well, thank you so much, Shireen, for coming and sharing your story. If people want to tweet at you, where can they tweet?
They can find me on Twitter at Shireen J. That's S-H-I-R-I-N, letter J.
And you can tweet Patrick and I, of course, at LingoPod. As always, thanks so much for listening.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment of the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence.
Well, are you recording it?
Yeah, do you mind?
Okay. You can just give me a couple of questions and I'll answer them.